For those of you that are visiting with us this morning, I told the church that I'm starting a series of sermons on the home. In fact, the title of the sermon tonight is A Dream Home. I think that's what everybody wants. They want their home to be perfect. They have in their mind exactly what they want their home to be like. But a lot of homes in America is in a mess today. Let me just give you a few statistics. 33 to 34% of all born-again individuals who have been married have gone through a divorce. That's who have been born again. The amazing thing about it is the statistics exactly identical to the incidents among non-born-again adults. Let me put it in layman's terms. Divorce is as high in the church as it is in the world. Don't shout me down now. During the period for which these people were single, one out of every three adults has lived with someone of the opposite gender other than family members. One quarter, 25% of born-again Christians have cohabitated. They shacked up with someone. Hey, that's a sin, by the way. 42% of adults who associate with a faith other than Christianity have cohabitated. Here's the amazing part. 51% of atheists cohabitate. Live with somebody else. Not married. A majority of American adults, 56%, are married. Marital status appears to be related to church attendance. While only one out of four married adults are unchurched, 46% of individuals who have never been married and 40% of those presently divorced are unchurched. 37% of Americans have children under the age of 18 living in their home. 14% are single parents. Adults who attend church regularly as a child are nearly three times as likely to be attending church today compared to their peers. Roughly 7 out of 10 American adults, 71%, had a period of time during their childhood when they regularly attended a Christian church. Less than 2 out of 3 adults who were churched as children take their children to church. Adults who attend church as a child are twice as likely as others to read their Bible during a typical week. Twice as likely to attend church during a week, and nearly 50% more likely to pray to God during a typical week. Teenagers, 57% of teens live in the same home with both of their natural parents. Teenagers, 47%, say their parents have the greatest influence on their spiritual development. 16% listed the church. 8% named their peers. 4% said that their relatives had the greatest influence. The desires that teenagers have, 88% desire a college degree. A comfortable lifestyle, 83%. Having one marriage partner for life, 82%. A close personal friendship, 84%. Having good physical health, 87% desire that. Having a clear purpose for living, 77%. Living with a high degree of integrity, 71%. Having a close relationship with God, 60% of teenagers say they want that. 56% say they want to influence other people's lives. 56% want to make a difference in the world. 55% want to work in a high-paying job. 54% want to have children. 50% have a desire to be deeply committed to the Christian faith. 49% want to live close to relatives. 43% want personal activity in the church. 28% want to own a larger home than what their parents have. 27% want to own the latest household technology and electronic equipment. 18% said they want to achieve fame or public recognition. Spiritually among teenagers, one-third of all teenagers say that they're born again. Two-thirds of teens believe that the Bible is totally accurate. That's saved and unsaved. Two-thirds describe themselves as religious. Three out of every five call themselves spiritual. Two out of every three teens, now listen to this, they call themselves spiritual, but two out of every three teens say that the devil or Satan is not a living being, but is a symbol of evil. Three out of five teens agree that if a person is generally good or does enough good things for others in their lifetime, they will earn a place in heaven. Slightly more than half say that Jesus committed sins while He was on this earth. Wow. 30% of teens believe that all religions are really praying to the same God. They're just using different names for God. 83%. Now you tell me that you can't influence teens. The biggest teaching coming out in textbooks today, and any Christian teacher will tell you, the biggest battle they have is humanism and situational ethics. 83% of teens maintain that moral truth depends on the circumstances. And only 6% believe that moral truth is absolute. When it comes to believing in absolute truth, only 9% of born-again professing teens believe in moral absolutes. In other words, this third says they're born again, but only 9% of the third believes that there's absolutes when it comes to morals in their life. Nearly 9 out of 10 teens pray weekly. 38% of teens donate some of their money to the church in a week. 35% of teens read their Bible each week, not including when they're at church. Only 32% of professing teenagers attend a youth group. Now, it's quite evident that they're not at church enough. It's quite evident that most of them are involved more in school activities than they are church activities. In fact, most parents in this church tonight, and I know you might be angry with me when I say this, but I'll just tell you. You have failed because you teach your kids that school activities, extracurricular activities, is more important than church and serving God. Football is not more important than God. Basketball is not more important than God. Baseball is not more important than God. And if you spend as much time praying with your child as you do teaching them to throw the ball, ouch. We'd be in a different circumstance in this country today. It's not that those things are wrong, but they become wrong when they substitute for what is right. And these teens are being misled. And now we have a generation that is lost. They have all these wonderful dreams. They have a dream of a wonderful home, a day of a better life, a day where they'll raise their children, when they'll do what's right. But in reality, when they deal with those dreams, they do not have the foundation to make it come to pass. They don't have the knowledge of the Word of God. I mean, for young people to say, I'm born again, and turn around to say, I don't even believe the devil exists, you've got a problem. Theologically, you've got a big problem. To say, I want to go to heaven. See, listen, young people, everyone that dies doesn't go to heaven. In fact, there's more people going to hell than going to heaven. The road to hell is wide. The gate is wide. The path is wide. But the road that leads to life is narrow, and few there be that find it. There's fewer going to heaven than going to hell. So when your friends die tragically because they've had too much alcohol and they die on the highway, You can write as many poems about them being an angel now, or when they get so strung out on drugs they blow their brains out. You can put every little nice serenade song in their casket you want to and play it before their funeral. But if they die lost, they are lost for all eternity. And those are the things that need to be taught in the home. But why aren't we teaching it in the home? Because the home is a mess. It's terrible what's happening in homes today. I mentioned this morning, a pastor told me this week, in his church he currently has 5 couples going through a divorce. He has a preacher that committed adultery and wants to know why he can't preach. In fact, he tried to get the pastor and deacons voted out for telling him that they were going to pull his credentials. He's living with another woman. Hey, let me get this right. As long as I'm pastor of this church, we won't even have to have a board meeting on it, preacher. I won't have to ask anybody about it. The truth of the matter is, you'll not only not preach in this pulpit, if I have my way, you won't preach in any pulpit in America. We've got enough sin going on. We need somebody to rise up with enough fortitude in this generation and say, God will honor those that honor His Word. Now, the dream in the home can create a lot of problems. Don't worry, this is a series, so I can cut it off when I have to tonight, okay? Remember, Eddie Hicks said that every night, too. Isaiah 37:5. Let me show you a dream. See, this is what I love about God. Our problem is this. What's going on in the home? See, all you see of my home is the public side. All I see of your home is the public side. And therefore, if you're having problems in your home, you're looking at everybody else in this church and you're saying, oh, what a wonderful home they have. They have a perfect home. Everything looks great. But you talk about God just tearing the roof off a home and saying, here's a family that's totally messed up. He did it in Genesis 37. In Genesis 37, let's look first of all at the third verse. See, here's where it all starts. Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37. Now Israel, verse 3. Now Israel, or Jacob, same man, loved Joseph more than all his children. Man, that's a mess right there. I know that he's a patriarch, but you go show him preference to your kids, your home's in trouble. By the way, I've seen a lot of Christians, you know, they've got a thing for boys and not for girls, and for girls and not for boys. They're all your kids. And you better love them all the same. And you better treat them all the same. And that means you treat the ones that's not in trouble as good as the ones that are in trouble. You don't single out the problem ones and spend all your fortune on them. You have more than one kid in your home, and the day that kid decides they're more important than everybody else in that home, just let the preacher tell them from the pulpit they're a brat. They're not the only one in the home. There's more than just them in the home. There's others in the home. But here's a dad that singles out a boy and he loves him more because he was the son of his old age. See, he's trying to justify it. Well, I'm old when I have... It's kind of like your grandparents that raised kids. You've ruined your grandkids raising them. Because you're old, you think that gives you right to mess with their thinking. Woo! Preach now. So you spoil them, buy them everything. Man, when your kid was growing up, they got out of line, you bum, smack you back into good sin. But they can write on the walls and they can do anything they want. There is a reason why God doesn't allow old people to reproduce. Now you think about it. Because when you go into your grandparent stage, it's not the same as being in the parent stage. You may have to raise your grandkid. I understand that. I'm just saying we've got some real problems in the home today. And then that grandparent raises one out of 13 and is better to that one than the other 13. And probably everyone in here had a grandparent like that. Well, let's not even go there. And look in verse 5. Here's the dream. And Joseph dreamed a dream. And he told it his brethren. And what's it say? And they hated him yet the more. They already hated him. Now they really hate him. They started out hating him. Now they hate him even more. Here was a man that had a dream in his home. And all he wanted for his home was for everybody else to get in line with that dream. He just wanted all the family on the same page. But when he told him that dream, something happened. God opens the pages of this in the life of Joseph, and he speaks his dream. And when he speaks his dream, the next thing we see is that this home was not perfect. These brothers start to conspire against him, and all kinds of things happen between these brothers inside the home. Lesson number one. Everyone will not agree with your dream. See, when you have a dream that goes one way and somebody else has a dream that goes another way, sure enough, sooner or later, there are going to be problems. Sometimes we're so quick that we just have to speak our heart and speak our dream. But some things God intends for us to ponder in our heart, to keep in our heart. You know the hardest thing to do? Love people who don't have the same dream you've got. Because when they don't have the same dream you've got, sooner or later someone's going to be miserable. And there's a whole lot of people that attend churches just like this that they don't understand what the church is all about. They're here tonight to try to get away from the misery of their home. They're here to hide out. But if worship is a camouflage for the real pain in your life, you corrupt worship. Wow. I'm not here at church tonight to get away. I don't have to get away from nothing. The Lord's with me in everything I face. Everything I face today, everything I face tomorrow, the Lord's there with me. I don't have to come here to hide. Nobody's out to get me. I don't have to have a place where I can hide out. We talk about that a lot, but I'm not here to run from anything tonight. I'm here to worship the Lord. And when we face these things, we'll find out that our personal pain sometimes will result in the church becoming a shelter for our personal pain, and we get in problem. Church is not your fallout shelter. Don't come here to get away. Joseph was going to be used to break some bad habits that had picked up through the generations of time. You know, a lot of bad stuff that's in you came from where you came from. I've noticed something in recent years about going to the doctor. First trip I ever had to make to the doctor, all the doctor wanted to know about was me. Did I have a fever? Did I hurt somewhere? What was my problem? What do I need? But anymore, when I go to have to go to a new doctor, you know what I find out? They want to find out more about my dead relatives than they do about me. Did your grandma die of diabetes? Did your grandpa have diabetes? Did your grandma and grandpa have heart disease? Did they die of heart disease? Did they have hardening of the arteries? Did they have this? Did they have that? And I always like it when they get down to, did they have mental problems? Right, I'm going to answer that one. And they just ask all these questions. You know, it's kind of like this. It's kind of like when you get in the Bible, you get to study the Bible, and you just get to somewhere that you really like what's going on, and all of a sudden you get down to those verse after verse after verse that Methuselah begat this one, and this one begat that one, and this one begat, and page after page after page, so-and-so begat so-and-so, and so-and-so begat so-and-so. And I'm thinking, Lord, what are you doing to me here? I mean, all that's good, and I'm glad the Lord knows it. But there's not a nugget in there anywhere to preach. You don't hear anything preached much out of the genealogies. You count on the fingers of one hand the sermons you've heard preached out of the genealogy. Why is that so important to God? You know why? Because God's saying to us, where you're going, a lot of where you're going has to do with where you come from. You can't change it. I remember I was so stupid when I got married. I was so stupid. Me, not Candy, me. Because, you know, everyone was giving us advice. We were young. I said to her, I said, baby, what we need to do, we don't need to listen to nobody. It's just me and you. I'm not marrying your mom. I'm not marrying your dad. I'm not marrying your aunts. I'm not marrying your uncles. I'm not marrying your grandma. I'm not marrying your grandpa. I've got your back. You've got my back. You're not marrying my family. My family don't have anything. It's just me and you, sweetie. Sounded good, but it's a bunch of baloney. I wasn't married 2 weeks till I figured out I'd married aunties and uncles, grandmas and grandpas, dad and them, mom and them, all of them. I married them all when I married her. So if you're one of those people that have a dream home where it's just going to be you and you're going to lock out everything from your past, you don't know what you're talking about. Because whoever you're marrying, they're going to bring some of their environment with them into the marriage. So the best thing you can do is check out where they came from. I'm not saying we're identical, but there's things that we pick up as a child being raised, and there's things also that we're passing on to our children. I see parents all the time come in and say, oh, preacher, I don't know why we'll do that child. They're so stubborn. There's a reason why. They talk back all the time. They're so sassy. Wonder where they got that. See, they're born and we look at them. And we look at them, they're 2 months old, 3 months old. We're like, oh, look at them. Oh, aren't they sweet? Oh, look, look. Of course they're sweet. They got to eat what you tell them to eat. Wear what you tell them to wear. Go to bed when you tell them to go to bed. Roll them over, leave them lay there, come back 30 minutes later right where you left them. Everything you tell them to do, they do it. Of course they're sweet. About the time they get 4. Come on, let's put your blue shirt on. I don't like blue. They call me a sissy if I wear blue. I don't want to wear blue. You're going to wear blue. It does get better. Stay with me. See, there's things that affect our environment. There's things that we bring into our relationships with us. We've all got garbage. There's those things from our, not that there's not good things, but we've all got some trash. Some bad things we picked up. Some things we don't even like about ourselves. And the truth of the matter is, when you get married, when your garbage gets together with her garbage, you've got to stink. Oh, Lord, help me. You got to stink. And then no one wants to admit it. No one wants to see it for what it really is. And now listen, I'm going to talk generally. Is it okay if I just use general terms? That means this is what's normal. And that means if you're not like that, before you say, well, I'm not like that, then that means you're abnormal. I'm talking in general terms now. See, there is some differences between men and women. Yeah. See, and some of the things that women like, men don't like. And some of the things that men like, women don't like. Generally speaking, when your stink gets together with her stink, the way you react is where you tell the big difference. Because women have to talk about everything. We got to talk about this child. We got to get this thing settled down. We got to find out what's going on here. And they just talk. Have you noticed? Sorry, ladies. I'm not to the men yet, but they just have to talk, don't they? I mean, you know, they said, hey, you know, Christmas coming up. I got to go to the mall. I want to buy a new dress. And then they ask that dreaded question. Where should I go buy a dress? I don't care. Here's a credit card. Go buy a dress. No, I tell you what. I think I'll go to Tuttle Mall. No, I might go to Easton Mall. Last time I went to Tuttle Mall, the traffic was awful. I couldn't hardly get in there. Now, I like Tuttle Mall, but you see over there at Easton Mall, they've got some new stores over there. But I went in Easton Mall one time, and I ran into Agnes there, and she talked and talked and talked and talked. And I couldn't find a parking place. And it just makes you want to rip your ears off the side of your head. You dealt with it too, haven't you? Because generally, the women like to talk, and the men, they don't want to say nothing at all. Yeah. Uh-huh. Sure. Whatever, babe. If you're smart, those last two words are the best of all. So we've got our differences. We don't want to deal with our differences, but bottom line is, we don't like to talk, you know. Your wife comes home and you say, your mom called. What'd she say? She's fine. How long did you talk? 30 seconds. I found out when you sit down to counsel with couples, you've got to set a time limit. Because you can talk too much. And sometimes you'll say too much and sometimes you won't say enough. Well, this ain't going over too good. I better move quick. Joseph got excited about his dream. I mean, picture Joseph. Put it in real life terms. This is the time when you just got the new job. This is the time when you just got the pay raise. This is the time when you just found out you're going to have a baby. This is the time when you just found out that you passed a major exam that makes a difference in your life. This is the time when something monumental has happened in your life. And it was so big and so exciting that Joseph had to tell it. He had to tell it to his brothers. And when he told it, that's when opposition came. You'll find out in relationships through the life of Joseph, there's three stages. One I'm going to give you tonight real quick, and I'll close with this. The three stages. When you hit opposition, that means you are excited about your dream. And suddenly, you hit opposition. And when you hit it, you go into the pit. Because somebody else that you loved was not excited about your dream. Why is it that people get in the pit? I think two or three things. First of all, your expectations are too high. People expect too much. They really do. Their expectation levels are way too high. I mean, did you really think that that child wouldn't sooner or later have a mind of their own? Did you really think they were going to stay in your home forever? Ooh, hold on. Feel a little tension right there. Did you really think that it was going to turn out the way that you thought. Didn't you really think that? I'm going to be reluctant to give you this, but through prayer, there's two things, two major problems that lead to divorce. One from the man's standpoint, one from the woman's standpoint. The two major reasons that lead to divorce in my ministry with couples I've dealt with. Before I quit, do you care to hear what they are? What leads people, not a thing in the world what you think. Not a thing what you think. I hear it all the time. Physical relationship, money. No, it's not it. Not it. I know that those are symptoms of the problem, but that's not the problem. Problem number one on the woman's side. When they get married with this dream home, oftentimes women will marry a man that they're not satisfied with, thinking they will change him. I know he drinks a little bit, but I'll change him. I know he's not saved, but I'll change him. Boy, I am preaching tonight. I know he gets mad and he beats on me a little bit, but I'll change him. I know he's a homosexual, but I'll change him. Don't you dare laugh at that. The first thing that homosexuals do, if they have been raised with a proper Christian raising because of embarrassment, they will marry someone to try to cover up their homosexuality. Wow. Am I preaching too straight for you tonight? Am I right or wrong about that? They're trying to convince people that they're straight. They're living a dream. They're trying to live a life that's godly without God. They're trying to do what's right without the Lord. But I'll change it. I know I'll change it. Listen, ladies, I want to tell you something. Young ladies, if you're going to marry someone and the day comes you marry someone, listen to what I'm about to tell you. You can't raise something that's already grown. You can't start them back as a baby, run them through as an adult, and raise them all over again. But the maternal instincts inside of a woman is that somehow I can mother this man, and I can change this man, and I can turn this man's life around. And if I go ahead and marry him, even though I know he doesn't love me, I'll change him. Even though he won't work, whoa, I'll change him. Even though I have to pay for our dinner, even every time I go out, I'll change him. Even though he's not polite to me and doesn't treat me with love, I'll change him. The good thing about women is, though, because of those maternal instincts, it's easier to teach them faith. Because they'll overlook the evidence of everything seen. They will. They'll overlook all the evidence that's there. Everybody else will be looking on saying, my, does she know what she's getting into? Come on now, you've said it about people. You knew good and well it wasn't going to work when they come down the aisle and said, I do. Because the whole time they were going to try to raise something that was already grown, something already set in its ways, something else. It troubles me when I deal with couples, and oftentimes I'll tell them, you're making a mistake. Candy said, you keep going, there ain't nobody going to want you to marry them. I said, well, I'll be able to sleep at night because also this idea of, well, they're going to just get a divorce anyway. I just go ahead and hook them up and whatever happens, happens. I'll get $25 out of it. Hey, I know preachers in this area right now that all they care about is $50 for a wedding. If you have a rehearsal, it's $100. They don't want to invest their time in telling people, you, listen ladies, you will not change him. Apart from the grace of God and the power of God, people will not change. Amen. and you won't change him. Now, the problem with men, you know what it is? They are afraid that she will change. Yeah. Sure. She cooked for me the first month. Sure. She watches her weight now. Uh-oh. Sure. She's all right with the fact when I come home late that she's understanding that the job has kept me there. Now you listen to me. The first sign of change, and the man will go into a pit. Some of you are living with people in the pit. They're in the pit, and you know they're in the pit. You say, wait a minute, Kyle, they're still functioning. You know, that's the thing about a man. He can go to work and still be in the pit. He can watch the football game, still be in the pit. He can function through life and pay his bills and still be in the pit. In fact, men, I think sometimes some guys even take a weekend furlough from the pit and get right back in it on a Monday. But they no longer care about what's going on at the house and no longer care about anything. They're isolated. They stare in space. They're looking off, and no matter what happens, yeah, that's good. You have a good day today? It's all right. They're in the pit. Do you know why our churches are dying? We've got pastors that's in the pit. They had a dream, and somebody rose up against the dream. And because of that, now they're in the pit. Now women, on the other hand, it takes them a lot longer to get in the pit. But the problem is, once they get there, it's a lot harder to get them out. I know you're looking at me like he's lost his mind. What do you mean it's a lot longer for them to get in the pit? Well, when their dreams begin to fade, I mean the guy, he can treat them like trash and walk out on them. And you know what? 3 years later, they still got his picture beside the bed and they'll get his handkerchief out just to smell his cologne and say, you never know, preacher, he could come back any time. But the man, on the other hand, said, I'll tell you what, you coming back, you better do it by Thursday. Come Thursday, sweetheart, it's over. But once the woman gets in the pit, it's harder to get them out. Some of you kids are in the pit. You call it what you want to. You call it depression, loss of hope, loss of desire. You're just functioning through life. You're showing up everywhere. You're a warm body, but you're in the pit. You're trapped. Your dream that was so exciting to you now has become a nightmare because you're trapped somewhere and you can't get out. You feel enslaved by the people that loved you. You're in the pit. I know I'm talking to some people that will tell you firsthand tonight. They've had some experiences in their life that led them to the pit. The pit's not a fun place to be. So the first stage is you get in the pit. I wish we didn't get in the pit, but there's still hope while you're in the pit. Because the pit can lead to better things. The pit was not the end of Joseph's life. It was the start of other things. But the first stage is the pit. When you lose your dream. You find yourself in the pit. You can only dream so long and hold it inside of you so long. And when you tell someone about that dream, that kid runs to mom and dad and tells them about the picture that they just drew. Mom and dad doesn't have time. Don't bother me right now. I'm busy. Something's on TV I want to watch. You do that little kid long enough, that kid will wind up in the pit. Now suddenly you think the one you love the most, they hate you. They despise you. You're in the pit. You're in the pit. See, if I can get people to realize there's hope in the pit, help in the pit, I think we'd maybe see some homes saved. But if you think the pit is your final destiny, then you'll try everything. There's a reason why people are cohabitating. While they're living together unmarried. Do you know why? Because they don't trust their dream. They're afraid to say, I do. They're afraid to commit. But you know what? They still wind up in the pit. Your heads are bowed for just a moment. I don't know what you're going through. I don't know what you're battling. But I know one thing. Their home's in trouble. There's homes in trouble in America, and there's homes in trouble in this church. Not because I've met with you, not because I've talked with you privately. It's just a fact. Homes are in trouble. People are in the pit. You stay depressed constantly. You can't seem to get out of it. You've lost your joy. The spring in your step is gone. There's nothing exciting for you. There's no future. You talk to any teacher that teaches on the high school level, and you ask them about kids that's graduating high school, you'd be amazed how many kids graduating high school don't have a clue what to do with their life. You know why? The world's made them feel like you're in a pit. Nothing you do is going to change it. There's no need to have a dream. There's no need to have hope. Some of you are in the pit. You don't even know how you got there. You don't even know what pushed you there. Somebody on the job did the wrong thing and it just began to eat at you. Someone, you've tried to change them and you haven't been able to change them yet and it's just eating at you. But you're in the pit.